Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, the quiet disaster that is youth unemployment. Why is it happening and what can be done? Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles, a career management social enterprise. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. In Canada, youth unemployment is about twice as high as the national average. In countries like Ireland, Italy, and Spain, youth unemployment hovers around 40%. 20-somethings, some with multiple degrees, search long after graduating. Those with only high school education fall further behind. Why is this happening? What can be done? We're going to find out today on Career Buzz. Neil Sandel is senior CBC producer and winner of an Atkinson Fellowship in Public Policy, focusing on youth unemployment. He says long-term unemployment and underemployment among young adults represents a profound squandering of talent, education, and creative energy. It is dispiriting for the individual. For society, it is a quiet disaster. Neil's been examining the causes of unemployment among young adults and investigating solutions to the problem. We're also going to hear from young adults in their own words. Peter Donnan graduated in 2011 with a major in psychology from Queen's University, found an unpaid internship, then was offered a full-time position with the company after they realized he was looking for work. Michael Panos just found a great job with the help of Youth Employment Services after leaving university. Plus, we'll be joined by Nancy Schaefer, president of Youth Employment Services and author of Good Work, to help us understand all the different kinds of people we're talking about when we use the word youth and what her organization is doing to support them. But first, to start our conversation, I'm joined by Neil Sandel, senior radio producer at CBC. He's worked on As It Happens, Quirks and Quarks, Ideas, and Out Front. Neil Sandel, welcome to Career Buzz.
Hi.
So what do you like about your job, your career in journalism so far?
I've always thought that I was paid to be curious. You know, I'm just a naturally inquisitive kind of person. And I got to journalism rather in a long and winding road. I was probably 30 or close to 30 when I started at CBC full time. When I got there, I felt like I now had permission to ask questions of interesting people and basically cold call the world to get those answers. So it really engaged who I was.
What strengths would you say you draw on, personal and professional strengths, to be successful in your job?
I would say I'm a generalist, so I'm widely read and I'm curious about the world. So one of the hallmarks of the best journalists, the journalists that I admire, is that they are always educating themselves. They are always reading. So curiosity, I would say tenacity, because you need to persist, you need to persevere. Those would be two of them.
You've been in media and journalism for a while, and you said it was a long and winding journey to get there. Can you just tell us a little bit about that journey? What led to your moving yourself and your career into journalism?
Well, let me give you a real thumbnail. So I came out of university wanting to go into theater and be an actor. I realized very quickly that I was no good at that. I was setting myself up for a really difficult life. But what I found was that I could write, I wrote some radio plays. I wrote 12 radio plays, that gave me a taste of radio. But that wasn't a sustainable income. I also had some success as a photographer in getting summer jobs and then some contract work with the government as a photographer. So I liked doing that. So I did that for a while. That petered out. I had a period of unemployment that was pretty depressing. Then I became a teacher. Did that for a couple of years.
Became, like you went and did teacher's college, Bachelor of Education?
No, I got a diploma. Yeah. I did that for a couple of years. I wasn't a great teacher and I didn't love it. And I think it's a profession where you need to love it because it's so demanding.
Yes.
And then I struck out on my own and I started my own photography business. I really wanted to give it a go. And I did that for 5 years. And then as I was doing that, I kind of made a pivot because I found that I could get more work combining the writing and photography. And I realized that I was better at the writing and I was more valued for the writing that I did. And so I started freelancing at CBC Radio in Winnipeg, which is my hometown.
Yes.
And then one day they said, do you want to work for us?
Nice.
No, I mean, but of course there were a lot of bumps in the road. It was hard to get in the door and that kind of thing. But it worked out in the end.
Did you study journalism formally?
No.
It's so interesting. People come at journalism from so many different angles, and you've come at it from writing, from photography, as opposed to this kind of typical way I think many people come to journalism these days.
I'm not a big fan of journalism studies. I think what you can learn about journalism in a classroom is maybe one semester's worth of learning. And I know great journalists, you know, people like Michael Enright, who are completely self-taught.
Yes.
I at one time was friends with the editor of the Calgary Sun and then later the Montreal Gazette, Peter Stockland. I asked him how he got his start, and he said, I started a small-town newspaper, and it's very much a learn-on-the-job type of profession.
Yes. And in the profoundly changing world of journalism that is today, and CBC is going to experience some cuts because of the recent budget, any advice that you have for aspiring journalists who are listening to us right now who would like to get into the world such as it is and as it's changing?
Get out of Toronto.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there are more opportunities in small centers. And, you know, there's at least in terms of radio, it probably applies to all media, find a good place to be bad.
Yes.
Find a place where you can have a lot of opportunities to do stuff, and if you're lucky, you'll find advisors and mentors there.
That's great advice, Neil. Thanks. Find a good place to be bad. Don't tell the employer that, but that's your own private strategy, right?
I think they know that you're going to be bad.
That's great. We're talking to Neil Sandell here, CBC radio producer and also winner of an Atkinson Fellowship in Public Policy. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM. Neil, congratulations on winning the Atkinson Fellowship. Your project is called Help Wanted, the struggles of young adults in the workforce. What led to your winning this fellowship?
It's an application, and it's a competition, basically. So every year, one of these fellowships is handed out. Any journalist in Canada can apply, print or broadcast, magazine, freelance, whatever. There's two rounds, but what you have to do is propose a project that is about a social issue and with a social justice focus, because the Atkinson Foundation has that kind of focus. So it's a combination of your proposal and who you are. They do a sort. I think there are about 75 applicants in 2011. Then they ask five of them to really elaborate, and I'm talking 5,000-word essay.
Yes.
Detailing what you want to do, how you're going to do it, why this is important. I got a call one day saying that I had won.
How did you feel when you got the call?
I was giggling. I was actually in a hotel room in Amsterdam, and they'd been trying to reach me for a week, and finally I got an email saying, you know, you should call John Hondrick, who's chairman of Torstar, and the Toronto Star is one of the underwriters of this fellowship. And I thought, well, they're not going to ask me to call them if I've been rejected. So I just kind of did a little dance and then gave him a call.
And he said, there you go, you got it.
Yeah.
So, and how did you work that out with your employer? Now, you had to let your employer know that you were going to step away to do this kind of sabbatical in a way.
Yeah, one of the preconditions for applying is that your employer gives you, is okay with it.
Yes.
And they give you a year off. So it's For this year, I'm being paid by the fellowship, not by CBC.
Right. Now let's talk about what you've learned over these months. This is a persistent problem in Canada, unemployment and underemployment, roughly 14% now. I think it just dropped below that to 13.9 in Canada, but still roughly double what the unemployment rate is in the rest of the country. Before we get into the statistics, what have you found about the stories behind the problem? Individuals who you've spoken to, either young people themselves or their parents, what are some stories that you've heard as you've been studying this problem?
I would say, on the whole, the young adults that I speak to kind of feel like they don't, like, how did I land up in this situation? And they feel that no matter whether they only have a high school education or they have a master's or even a PhD, they kind of go, they're in a situation of, huh? How did this happen to me? Even those who know it's coming down the track. I have to tell you, my approach has been, I've been following three tracks, Mark. I want to understand the economics of it. I want to then explore best practices, who's making a difference in solving this problem. And then I want to hear, I'm really curious about the stories of young people. So some of the inspirational people that I've met are the people who have been helping.
Yes.
Yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, I was back in Winnipeg, and I was looking at the urban Aboriginal population there, which is doing very, very poorly. Even though Winnipeg and Manitoba, the economy there is doing quite well, better than Ontario's, frankly.
Yes.
There's still deep pockets of poverty there. And Native kids are not graduating at a very high rate. I think it's something like 2 in 10, which is...
Graduating high school.
High school.
Yes.
Which is appalling. So there are programs now that are trying to get that job done. So, you know, I met a woman who's working for Pathways to Education in Winnipeg. A Cree woman by the name of Darlene Klein. I think she's 56 years old. At the age of 44, she got her high school diploma. Mm. She had dropped out of school as a teenage mom. She knew she was smart enough to finish her high school education. She'd had a great work history, you know. She'd always worked her way up and ended up being a manager. And finally, she got her high school education at the age of 44, but that's not the story. It doesn't stop there. She talks to her advisor and says, you know, maybe I should, like, get my nurse practitioner certificate and go to university, maybe. Because no one in her family had ever gone to university, and her advisor says, why stop there? And, like, and what do you really want to do, Darlene? And she says, well, really what I'd like to do is be a social worker. So she goes back to the university, gets her social work degree, but she goes along with her now adult daughter. So they both graduate at the same time, and that in turn inspires 4 other members of her family to go to university.
A real ripple effect.
Yeah, yeah. So I found her an amazing story and absolutely the best person to be leading this kind of program, because she herself is a model.
So I want to come back to the best practices, because of course people want to know what can we do about this. But just to understand the problem a little bit more, you know, we talk about unemployment, and it's a funny number. The way we measure it is only people who are getting employment insurance or welfare. The numbers are probably even bigger. There's unemployment, and then there's this notion of underemployment, of a lot of people taking jobs that they don't necessarily feel are part of their future careers, but they're doing it because they have to. What's behind all of that? What's causing this whole problem?
There are a number of causes. The short-term causes are the recession. So in recessions, the young always lose their jobs first and are hurt the most. There are long-term economic changes in the economic structure, outsourcing, globalization. Computers are doing jobs that people used to do. It's easy to get lost in the statistics. So I like to really keep that simple. And here's the thing, two things that are really stand out when you look at the stats. 200,000 people under the age of 25, 200,000 fewer are working now than when the recession hit in 2008. Now, who are those 200,000? Almost all of them are people between the ages of 15 and 19.
Yes.
So what does that tell you? It tells you that the people without post-secondary education have been hit the hardest. It also tells you that, but we also know that there are lots of people with great educations or at least one university degree who are working at jobs, you know, like being a sales clerk or, you know, the classic Starbucks barista.
Yes, yes.
What I would call underemployment for somebody with a post-secondary education. So what's happened is those people have displaced the lesser educated people. So in terms of best practices, in terms of where the real work has to be done and where the real payoffs are, I think you need to look at programs that are helping these people who have been left behind.
Right. So you're kind of dividing this roughly into these two cohorts, the 15 to 19-year-olds who are looking for work. These are people who have left school at whatever age, at 15, 16, whatever. And then this other group who might be a bit older, the 20 to 24. And those people are kind of in the positions that somebody younger might have been in if it weren't such a rough economy.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at people under the age of 30 because the 25 to 29-year-olds, a lot of them are still in school, and so their first work experience might happen when they're 26 or 28. Now, I think it's a cause for concern that they're underemployed, some of them are having real trouble finding work. So I'm really looking at all groups and how they're doing.
So what's the risk here? Like if these kinds of problems persist, we've looked around now and we see in the news, we hear countries like Spain. Spain seems to have it really bad, something like 50% unemployment among youth. You know, we saw the whole Arab Spring caused by a guy who actually had an employment issue in Libya. I mean, you know, it looks like there's potentially catastrophic consequences. Here in Canada, it's a problem at 14%, whatever the number is. It's not quite as significant as it is in Spain. What's the risk?
In Canada, I think the risk is lesser than what you might find in a place like Spain or Tunisia, for example. But I think the risks are long-term disaffection, scarring, which is the economic term for long-term loss of wage. People lose their skills. People who can't find work in the underground economy, which is disastrous in so many ways. It's disastrous to them because they work in non-unionized, non-regulated, unsafe environments. It's disastrous for the economy because those people are detached from, no one collects taxes from them.
Yes.
Those are some of the risks. Yeah, I would say those are some of the risks.
We're joined here by one young adult. Peter Donnan graduated in 2011 with a major in psychology from Queen's University and began looking for work right then. He did find unpaid internship and only recently was offered full-time position after his company realized he was looking for work elsewhere. Peter Donnan joins us by phone. Peter, welcome to Career Buzz.
Happy to be here.
So, Peter, let's talk about your job search. You graduated about a year ago now.
Yeah.
What were you hoping to find in terms of work back then?
Well, when I first graduated, I actually hoped, you know, before I graduated that I would get a full-time position. But what happened is, you know, just all the positions just seemed to be unavailable, and the positions that were offered seemed to be positions that I'd be just accepting as a job versus an actual career.
Yes.
And I hadn't had jobs before, but this seemed to be, like, nothing on the path. So during the first bit, I just coached for my old high school, and this is one of the underground jobs where it was kind of under the table, for originally, and that's what happened originally. And it took me a long time before it's actually to enter the career path, which I just recently did.
And how did you go about your job search? You know, there's much discussion about how best to do that, and so many people rely on online applications, you know, click the send button with your resume. Were you relying on that, let's call it traditional job search, or were you doing other things? Were you networking, talking to people? What did you do and what worked?
Well, I did a little bit of both, and then there's some ones that did work. I did network as much as I could with people, and it seemed to be a lot of people had best intentions, but just nothing that suited me, where they're like, yes, I'll look out for you, and yes, I'll try to help you out as much as I can, but a lot of that time, it just never really panned out. And I did do like some online search, and actually it was an online search that led to my internship, which eventually led to my career. But I did feel that networking did have a higher rate of return.
Uh-huh. And so what happened? You did get an unpaid internship. And this is, lots of listeners might be contemplating just that thing. And sometimes people think, well, on the one hand, it's a great step forward because at least you have something. On the other hand, it looks like, free labor in a way. What did you find and how did it come about?
Well, I had an unpaid internship, and originally it was meant for 3 months unpaid internship. And then towards at the end of the 3 months, they didn't have a full-time position. And so I extended for another month of unpaid internship, and then I was coming up to the end of the second month or the second round of unpaid internships, and it was looking like I wasn't going to get another position again. So I really started looking for work elsewhere because I did like the company I was working at, but it just seemed like I wasn't going to get a position. And then once they realizing I was leaving every other day to go to interviews, you know, they kind of scrambled up and got a position available. And I guess unpaid internships, it really depends on what field of work you're working on. I'm in advertising, and it seems unpaid internships are kind of the norm for different for the work, and a lot of the different companies, you have to go through an unpaid internship even if you have previous work experience.
So it's interesting to hear how the unpaid gig, like you persisted in it.
Yeah.
What happened? Who noticed this thing about you kind of getting up, I guess, dressed in your suit and going to interviews? How was it that was noticed and that this then became the full-time position?
Well, it was fortunate. My former boss actually helped me out a lot. He basically went up, because I talked to HR personally, but he went up to the higher-ups and said, hey, if you want this guy, you better snatch him up now because he's about to leave. Because I was getting interviews and I was almost going to a different company. And so that is one of the things about networking inside the company that really did help.
That's amazing. So your boss went to bat for you. In fact,
yeah.
That was what happened.
Yeah.
So if you were advising listeners, if listeners are either unemployed now or they are in an unpaid internship or an unpaid gig, what advice do you have for them?
One thing is make sure you're looking at, if you're in an unpaid internship, is there's kind of like the trust, and I've seen it with other people. You know, you have to keep looking out for other opportunities that arise. And even though you're in an unpaid internship and there's always the expectation that you'll go into a full-time, that you should be looking for work elsewhere because it seems to be a lot of, especially with younger crowds, people jumping from, you know, one company to another company versus just staying with the company and progressing. And also, an unpaid internship is helpful to get a job because that's what ultimately led me to have a job, but it's just tough, and you have to be able to, you know, go 3 months of working every day without a salary.
Yeah, and now that you've got this, which is great, Peter, and congratulations on it. What else helped in the whole process? Were there any other things that you engaged in that you did that helped the process along?
I did. I went to the Career Cycles like Building Center, which helped a lot, and so I seeked out professional help with basically how to interact with people because I was kind of had trouble, and then I also had a lot of help from friends and family who prepped me for interviews, you know, helped me research, helped look out for other companies, and then people who, you know, were giving me contacts to talk to people. And so that, you know, fortunate enough for me is I have a network of people that were, you know, wanted to help me and wanted me to get a position, and that was probably one of the biggest helps.
Great. Now, I have Neil Sandell here, Peter, who we've been talking to about this issue. Neil, what do you make of Peter's story?
Well, it's an example of internships at their best. It's led to a job offer. I think Peter would agree, if he's talking to his contemporaries, that sometimes internships can be flat-out exploitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, what advice would you give to a contemporary of yours about how to distinguish what's a good internship versus a bad one?
Well, it's actually, this was given me advice by the HR, is the best way to get hired is become so essential in your internship that if they fire you, the company, like, you know, what you're doing will collapse. And so that almost seems to be the way, is that if they lose you, it will be negative. And then you go out and basically saying, if I don't get a position, I'm looking for work other places. You have to, if they can keep paying you for free, they will pay you for free. I mean, if they can keep not paying you, they will not pay you. You have to make yourself needed and yourself seem to be that they need to pay you in order to keep you. And that's the suggestion, to move from the internship to the actual paid position.
And when you were in the internship, did you actively ask to be taught, or you know, some interns are quite passive, some really go out of their way to you know, soak up the learning. What was your relationship with your boss?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have good bosses, and they were, because I have been on internships before, just in a different field, where I'm kind of just on the computer just reading Wikipedia because I have nothing to do. And this one was fortunate enough that I have tasks, and there's enough people that, you know, everyone's busy enough that if you ask for work to do, they'll generally give you work and more than happy to do that. So that was a fortunate thing that I was able to learn from different areas. But there are internships where they kind of need you when they need you, and if they don't, you just sit in a desk all day. So you have to really be proactive, and even if you are proactive, there are some internships that just don't give that. And so I was fortunate enough to have an internship that really taught me.
That's great. So being proactive and becoming indispensable. What else, Peter, can you share with listeners about what you've learned now that you have some reflection time on your education and how you chose to navigate education and career? What else can you tell listeners about what you've learned about making good choices?
Well, the one big choice is, you know, it's never too early to really start looking for the career. I waited till the spring semester of my university to really start, and I realized by then that it was supposed to be, you basically, like, the first month into your senior year is when you really should be looking for a job. And so that was my big downfall, and so I wasn't able to get a position while I was in university, and that hurt basically because I was, you know, unemployed, and there's kind of the stigma of being not in a job that actually hurts for getting it. So the one big thing is, make sure if you're, you know, coming up to the end of graduation that you make sure that you get an actual position while you're still in university is a big one. And then also it's important to, you know, honestly just get work. And, you know, it might be sucks, especially in the current economy, for maybe not being the job you want. But as long as it's the field that you're interested in, you can work up.
Right on. That's great. Peter Donnan, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz this morning.
All right, thank you.
Great. We were just talking to Peter Donnan here, who just found a job. It took him some months, and the whole question of internships is a very interesting one, and this idea of good internships versus potentially exploitive ones. What are your thoughts on that, Neil?
We need to find some way of encouraging a culture of great internships. But I want to pick up on something that Peter described implicitly, which is it's better to take something than nothing. I think I meet some people who are a little bit worried, are a little bit fussy when it comes to the job they take. And I understand where they're coming from, because they have high expectations. They want a job that will be engage them. And I was like that too. And I think it hurt me in the end, because I think that you never know from the outside what a job is going to be like. You never know the kind of learning that you're going to acquire. So whenever anyone asks me, I say, take something.
Yeah, cast the net a little wider than you might be originally thinking about.
You don't know where something's going to lead.
Right on. We're talking to Neil Sandell here. He's won the Atkinson Fellowship in Public Policy, looking at youth unemployment. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a musical break. Neil, you brought a song here. Do you want to just quickly set it up for us?
Sure. This is Ottawa singer-songwriter Lynn Miles from her absolutely fabulous album, Slightly Haunted. A little bit of twang this morning. It's Lynn Miles. Mm-hmm.
about your fans, that I wouldn't go dance and that there wouldn't be suspense. I never told you to start counting on me, to go making plans or to lose any sleep. But I always told you, look after your heart, keep it protected and out of the dark. And I always told you to make it foolproof. And baby, I always told you the truth. Told you that I would be here tomorrow, that we wouldn't shed tears, that there wouldn't be sorrows. I never told you that I would do what you wanted, but I try to tell you that I'm slightly haunted. And I always told you, look after your heart, keep it protected and out of the dark.
Take my $1.50. Take it all.
Whoa, why are you paying fees?
My credit union only has a few ATMs, so I pay.
Check the back of your debit card for the exchange logo. Your credit union has more than 2,300 ATMs.
That's right, folks. The exchange is your ticket to no-fee withdrawals, deposits, PIN changes, and more at over 2,300 ATMs across Canada. Check the back, Jack. Get the ATM locator app at keepyourchange.ca. Keep your change. Use the exchange.
Ah, spring. A time for the early bird to catch the worm.
Worms aren't the only thing you'll find from the roots up. CIUT wants to thank you for your continued support and early donations. Simply donate now until midnight on April 15th to our 2012 Spring Membership Drive, and you'll be entered in to win our Early Bird Prize Pack, filled with CIUT swag, a one-year VIP pass for you and a guest to RainbowCinema.ca, a Samsung Q2U recording pack, and much more. To donate, go online at www.ciut.fm. CIUT 89.5 FM, 25 years and counting from the roots up.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto, presenting the history and evolution of sound for 25 years and counting. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before moving on to our continued conversation on youth unemployment, I want to let listeners know, first of all, next Wednesday, April 18th, is the Spring Membership Drive. Career Buzz is going to have a special show with all three of your hosts on the show. You can do some advanced membership activity and join CIUT. It's a registered charity. $25 buys you an annual membership, and you can just say that Career Buzz is your favorite show. Go to CIUT.fm. I also want to let listeners know the free weekly teleworkshop called Unearth Career Excitement, Turn Your Strengths and Desires into a Career You Love. A free teleworkshop is tomorrow, and every Thursday shows you how. CheckCareerCycles.com to register. My guest today is Neil Sandel, senior CBC producer and winner of an Atkinson Fellowship Award focusing on youth unemployment. We're talking about youth unemployment, why it's happening, what can be done. And joining the conversation is Nancy Schaefer. She's president of Youth Employment Services in Toronto and author of Good Work. Nancy has with her Michael Panos. Michael just found a great job with the help of Yes Employment Services after leaving university. Welcome, Nancy and Michael, to Career Buzz.
Hi.
Hi, guys. Nancy, help us understand the range of different people we're talking about when we use the word youth.
Yes. First, I also want to say hi to Neil.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. When we talk about youth, I think this clarification was given to me last week at a meeting I had with our federal government around youth unemployment, and a gentleman stood up who works for Stats Canada, and he said it's important for us to remember that you cannot just talk about youth in general. It's the same way you can't talk about women in general or men in general. We're all uniquely individual. But more than that, we have to realize that young people fit into, you could fit them into several categories. Those who have less than high school education, those who have high school education, those who have some post-secondary, those who've graduated, those who have postdocs, etc. That's one way of classifying young people. Others are around what kind of jobs they're looking for, entry level. Are they looking for management positions, construction jobs? So not all young people, when we talk about it, it's a big topic. And unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to listen to your first half hour because I'm sure with Neil's expertise and what he's gathering there, we're learning more about this issue. That was my point. That and are we talking about young people between the ages of 15 and 30? And you can break it down that way, teenagers, young people in their early 20s, and the definition of youth is climbing up now, as I said, to 30 and under.
Yeah, we did actually touch on that time zone. We talked about 15 to 19-year-olds, and that's one focus, and then 20 to 24 and even up. I was interested, Nancy, on your annual report, I saw that 65% of Yes clients have been out of work or training or school for at least 4 months, and about half of those for more than a year. That seems also like another way to look at youth, some who are much more keen and, I guess, optimistic because the period of time that they've been looking is shorter, and then others who may feel more discouraged because it takes longer. Have you seen that distinction as well?
Well, yes, we have, and of course the recession in the economy is directly tied to that and tied to our performance. So when a young person walks through the door here right now, we know it's taking close to 5 months to help them get a job. And Mike sitting beside me, and in his case, Michael Tellis, I think it was even longer than that. But it used to be before the recession, and in a booming economy, a young person can generally count on getting a job within 3 months. Even that's long. If you need a job and you're desperate, waiting 3 months to get a job might seem like a long time, but when it goes into 5 months, and some of our young people, it's going on a year, that is way too long. And so it is tied, it's a multi-layered onion, if you will, but certainly we have seen a big change in the length of time it takes a young person to find a job or establish themselves in a career related to their education.
Yes. Michael Panos, let me bring you into the conversation. First of all, congratulations on finding a job. What did you find, and how did it come about?
Basically, I'm currently working for Molson Coors at the brewery North Toronto. Really, at the end of the day, I found the job just through applying online, but as Nancy was alluding to, I had been looking for work for about 9 months, so in my case, it was actually longer than the 5 months she was speaking of. But Yeah, I mean, I just started 2 weeks ago, so it's been going pretty well.
And over those 9 months, can you share with us how your whole thoughts and feelings changed? 9 months is a long time. Nancy was saying 3 to 5 months. And Peter, who we had on just before the commercial break, he also had spent, I think it was at least 6 months, and then had to spend a lot of time in an unpaid internship before he got paid work. How did your feelings change over those 9 months?
When I was laid off from my job as a driver, this was in the summer of 2011. At that time, I was still planning to go back to school at U of T for the September semester. And so at that point, once school began, I was actually focusing on just looking for something part-time to just have some extra money while I was in school. But then as that semester went on, I kind of decided that university wasn't really for me, and basically me and my parents, who I was living with at the time, had sort of a disagreement on that, and so I left my parents' place, and at that point it became more urgent for me to find full-time work. And I guess in February, or I discovered YES, through resume services, through the career counselors here, they've been great. They provided me with a free voicemail, internet access, and telephone, which, I mean, without those, I mean, it's really almost impossible to find a job. And after I left my parents' house, I was really left without all these resources that I was sort of taking for granted before.
It's interesting. The resources, sometimes you don't think of how important something like voicemail is so people can get back to an internet access. What else was effective when you accessed the services from Youth Employment Services? What did you find effective that really helped, especially as these months wore on and you might have become discouraged? What helped?
Other than just the general resources, I mean, I can't say enough about having a voicemail. The resume counseling, I mean, I had produced my own resume in the past, and just I never really had a problem finding work, say, 5 years ago. And, it was taking so long, I figured, my resume must have been not up to date. And, I mean, at this point, with the help of the career counselors, I have about 4 different resumes for sort of 4 different fields of work. And, I had never really thought about having a kind of going that in depth, and I mean, even that is just really important, and I would have never thought of that had I not found YES.
That's great. So you started to learn the employer perspective and to start to target things like resumes so that it's not one size fits all. I think that's an important lesson. Is there something you know now about the whole job search experience that if you had known it earlier, it would have helped you get what you wanted sooner?
Let me think about that one. You just kind of have to keep up at it. I mean, in January, February, I had applied for a few jobs that, I mean, on paper, it seemed like I should have got them, and, I mean, I just never heard back. And, I mean, I was getting sort of discouraged, and lo and behold, this job that I have now, it's just great. I mean, I just really had applied for it and just forgotten. So, I mean, just keep putting your name out there, applying for jobs, and, I mean, eventually someone will call back. But, yeah.
And I had asked Mike how he actually found this job.
Yes.
And he said that his counselor here at YES had recommended a certain website to him where this job was. So the more that we find that our clients, our youth, stay connected to us, we can share all the resources and all of our knowledge and expertise with them. That's our mission, and that's our point. And again, I want to say that recently I've met with some international people running employment programs in European countries, and one of the best practices that came out of that sort of internationally is being able to establish a trusting relationship, a face-to-face relationship with young people. And then proceeding with, you know, making available all these resources that we have. So one of my recommendations, of course, is that young people should take advantage of social media. That's another opportunity out there, and they can use that in their job search. But not everyone knows how to do that. So there's if, if, it really helps, and it can improve a young person's chance of getting employed if they find resources in the community.
Absolutely. And this connection here, building that relationship between the helping people, and there's a lot of helping people, and governments certainly have a stake in this, and they want to support services like YES and others. But it's about building that relationship. Nancy, how do you do that? How do you reach out and make sure that, that the community who should and could benefit from your services actually does so?
Well, we do a lot of what we call outreaching and marketing and advertising. We have to do that because, like anything else, if you don't do that, nobody knows you exist. But beyond that, we have a lot of partnerships with schools, with the high schools and with the universities and the colleges, so that we try to make it a seamless delivery. So if they're graduating or they've dropped out, they haven't completed, that they know that YES exists. But it's a lot of work for us to let young people know that these services are available. But once they do know, then they can avail themselves of any level of service. Some just come in to use the computer lab and get access to the phone services. Others work one-on-one directly with counselors. And that we have been, and now the fact that it's sort of recognized as a best practice, that face to face, trusting relationship is valuable in providing help to young people.
Right on. Michael, how did you come across YES? How did you find it? And how did your peers, other people that you maybe met at YES, how does everybody find YES?
Personally, me, after I left my parents' house rather abruptly, I was staying at a youth shelter, which is at Queen and Spadina, which is actually fairly close to where YES is located, just at sort of Richmond and Bathurst there, and I actually just saw it, and I saw it was a youth employment center, and I was looking for work, so I walked in and applied. I know just a lot of the general sort of social services and shelters around the city, they are aware of YES and other locations like it, so that's one way that the message is getting out, but really, yeah, I had never thought until recently, January, February, that I would ever need an employment center to help me find work. And, I mean, I guess just with the times of today, that seems to be the case.
Interesting. Neil Sandell here. You know, you've been studying best practices in Canada and around the globe. What Michael just said, like he didn't realize he actually needed that service until he kind of stumbled upon it, and then he realized how super valuable it was. Are you finding that there's a disconnect between youth and their needs versus the service and the service providers, and they're not finding each other as effectively as they could?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of conundrums in all of this. One is that there's actually a glut of information. It's just it's finding it, and then it's that information being timely information. So, you know, telling a teenager about the labor market maybe may not be appropriate. The other conundrum is that there are people without jobs, but there are jobs without people. And that works at two levels. It works in terms of skills. There are skilled, you know, there's a skilled labor shortage in Canada. We're not directing or training enough people for those jobs. The other is a geographical imbalance. I was at a job fair last week, and there was a huge presence from recruiters from Saskatchewan, where there's an unemployment rate of 5%. It's less than that in Regina. I mean, if you have a pulse, you can find a job in Saskatchewan. And so I think part of the picture is, and particularly for young people who tend to be unattached, less weighed down by houses and responsibilities, is to look further afield where there is a robust economy.
Interesting. Michael, did you contemplate leaving Toronto? Did you contemplate, you know, going to some other place where it might have been easier to find a job?
Very much, yes. Actually, I have some family out west in Edmonton and other family in Calgary, and I was actually very close to leaving and living in either Edmonton or Calgary. My cousin has a job similar to what I have now, and he's making almost $10 an hour more than me.
Wow.
So it's like night and day between Ontario and out west, the way the job market is.
And Nancy, are you finding that as a trend? Do you find that people who are walking into Yes say, well, what about Saskatchewan? What about Alberta? All the jobs are there. Maybe I should go there.
Yes, because, I mean, that's another change that we all are aware of, that Toronto and Ontario used to be the generator of wealth and jobs in the country, and people were coming to Ontario. And now, clearly, there's a swing away. I mean, everybody's kind of amazed. How did this happen, the loss of manufacturing jobs in Ontario, Alberta not getting enough people for their resource jobs? I was talking to people this week about the electrical, the need for electrical workers because of electricity that we need in this country. They can't meet their needs. So there's several industries, as Neil's is saying. So it's geography and it's industries that can't get enough qualified people, can't get enough. And then we heard from the federal government just yesterday that they have a new plan for immigration to bring in more skilled people to address some of these needs. So it is, I agree with Neil, quite a conundrum where we have young people, and we not just young people, but adults as well, who really need to work, want to work, have skills, and then we have certain industries and sectors and provinces that are crying for workers. So, you know, you spoke earlier, how do young people know about services like Yes? Well, how are we getting these other messages across? I mean, but in answer to Mike's comment there, that he was very close to going out west. Now, he had relatives that he could go and stay with, probably. But when young people, when you tell them this, they go, well, how could I possibly manage that? How would I pay for my ticket? Where would I live? I don't have the resources to make such a move. So it is a difficult issue just to say, well, you know, move to Saskatchewan where the jobs are, or get involved in the in all the boom out in Alberta, when young people don't really see that they can manage that. So, yeah, that's another very hard thing that we're dealing with now, particularly in Toronto.
Yes. Neil Sandell, you've been seeing this. You've been crisscrossing the country looking at this. What's your take on this, uneven distribution of jobs and the jobs without people without jobs?
I think what we need to do is figure out incentives that would grease the wheels, because I think Nancy makes a good point. If you have social supports, it helps. I was curious to ask Michael, what would have been the tipping point for you to go to Edmonton?
Basically, if let's say when I first came to the Y House, I had never stayed in a shelter before, and I mean, I had assumed it would be a fairly terrible place, and I was fairly pleasantly surprised. It was much better, but had it been what I was expecting, that could have been it. I've lived in Toronto my whole life. I really didn't want to go to Edmonton or Calgary, just because I mean all my friends, all my contacts are here. But really, yeah. I mean, just if it had gone on much longer and I couldn't find employment here to find my own place, then that really would have been it.
Right. We're talking to Neil Sandell here and Nancy Schaefer from Yes and Michael Panos, all about youth unemployment and the problems and the solutions to what's a real important issue here in Canada. Neil will be finishing his Atkinson Fellowship soon and hopefully publishing and raising the conversation about this. Here on Career Buzz, I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Nancy, in a recent CBC interview, you were quoted as saying that the government and the private sector should take more action by introducing more accessible co-op and professional job placements. So that brings us to the conversation about what the government, what private sector should be doing. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think all levels of society have to address this issue. We can't just say that it's the government's responsibility or it's the school's responsibility to educate young people about careers early on. I think it's a continuum of services. But I do believe strongly that the government, federal government and our provincial have to take leadership on this issue. And then they take leadership. Now, I was pleased that youth employment, the YES strategy federally, was not reduced in its budget. In fact, they put in an extra $50 million for youth employment programs to get youth in sectors where the jobs are. But more leadership. I mean, you know, I don't really see them promoting that or taking strong new direction and so on. But nevertheless, if they did that, then they could bring in the corporate sector and the private sector where there are more, their jobs are, and more incentives for employers to do. Now, I missed the first part, but I think it paid internships we're talking here.
Yes.
Or volunteer internships. In high schools and in more programs in colleges and universities that have co-op placements, these all enhance a person's ability to get a job. But incentives for employers to take risks, because when they're in this situation where they're fearing for their bottom line, they're not apt to create opportunities for young people. So, and then we have the not-for-profit sector, which is a huge employer in this country. And that not-for-profit sector is also a good place for young people to be working. So, but we need some leadership, and then we need incentives and some very concrete, specific programs. We have got some good ones now, but they're under-resourced.
Thanks. Thanks for that summary, Nancy. We just have a couple of minutes here, so I'm going to wrap this segment up. But thank you for joining us here on Career Buzz, Nancy Schaefer, President of Youth Employment Services, and Michael Panos. Thank you for your participation, and good luck in your new job.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Neil, we just have a minute here just to wrap up what we've heard from Nancy and then from the two younger people who talked to us about their job search. How does all this dovetail, what we're hearing, with what you've been hearing both nationally and internationally, so that we can, I don't know, raise the level of the conversation in this country about this important issue?
Well, I think Nancy makes great points. We do need more leadership. We have a fragmented delivery system. Can I just add one really important thing that we could do? Working or work tasting experience in high school, so-called co-ops or apprenticeships, is crucial. I see no reason why that should not be mandatory. Right now it's been kind of relegated to people who don't go to university. But I think there's no reason why everybody shouldn't do that. The more we can integrate work experience with education all the way through, we'll have better outcomes.
Right on. And in a word, Neil, from your own twists and turns in your story, what's one thing you'd like to share with listeners about what you've personally learned about making good career and life choices?
Every experience is valuable. You never know when you're going to draw on it later in your life and in your career.
Great advice. Neil Sandell, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. Two other hosts of Career Buzz are Leanne Sachs at livinginthemoment.ca and guest host Mark Swartz at careeractivist.com. If you have comments or questions,